Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Save on your next oil change at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Choose Castrol Edge Full Synthetic Motor Oil to provide maximum performance and protection for your engine. Get a $15 gift card after rebate when you buy 5 quarts of Castrol Edge for $34.95. Plus, 2 times O Rewards points. Offer valid in-store and online at O'ReillyAuto.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the California Angels and the City of Los Angeles, on the occasion of Her Majesty's royal visit, please welcome internationally renowned opera star Enrico Palazzo.
Yes, he's in the intensive care ward at Our Lady of the Worthless Miracle.
Hey, welcome everybody. We are back. This is your normal prospects crew. Big Ben and Robbie Baseball here talking some fantasy baseball. But we're here to discuss dynasty rankings. And tonight we are going to key in on starting pitchers. Now, Robbie, you and I were talking before we hit the record button. We're going 15 deep tonight. You leave a lot of talent sitting out there when you only go 15 deep in starting pitchers. I could win a lot of leagues with guys that we aren't going to talk about in our rankings tonight.
Absolutely, Ben. Absolutely. I would almost rather not take anyone in my top 15 in Dynasty if I could get three of the guys between 16 and 30.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of maybe getting two in my top 30, if you just give me three from 16 to 30, I would be better off long term. Because as we all know, we are one curveball. What's that in my shoulder? Away from 18 months of misery, or oh man, something in my elbow popped, and that could change the whole career. So, I mentioned this to you earlier. I looked at my 2022 going into 2023 dynasty rankings back when I did it with Dingers. Julio Rodriguez, insanely high. Sorry, I said Julio Rodriguez. Julio Urias.
Oh, Urias.
Insanely high.
Gosh, yeah.
Grayson Rodriguez as a prospect was the pinnacle type prospect. Alek Manoah rocketing up. Man, things change quick. And that's not to say Grayson Rodriguez is not an excellent pitcher. He is. I'm just saying at the time, the talk was essentially like, this is the guy, and there are five guys who were not even ranked within 50 spots of him or in MLB at the time I made that list who are now in front of him. And that's just very quickly looking. But, that's why we had to expand it a bit because there's three outfielders, of course. There's only one first baseman, one second, one short, one third. There's 19 catchers, of course, because they're so useless. They don't do any production for us anyway. But pitchers, there's a million. There's five in every rotation. And we're now commonly seen, including with, you know, as I'll dub it, the best team in baseball, the Dodgers, on paper, with six. And others with six. Tampa Bay's going to roll six. Now, does that come into effect with how we set up these dynasty rankings? I'll tell you, Ben, I've been teasing it with all my other dynasty rankings that I love points leagues and I like to play in points leagues, but I'm doing my rankings in 8x8. Well, tonight I switched it up and I went with points. Who do I think is on a good enough team to get the wins, is good enough to avoid the losses? JP Sears, if only we were doing the top 75, I'd be able to talk about guys who are fighting off crappy teams, but that's not in consideration for tonight. I'm doing points. That's how I'm breaking this down. And of all of the players on my list, there's one guy who benefited the best or the most, from a move this offseason from a non-competitive team to what I deem to be at least a 500 team, and that's why they are where they are when we get there. So how did you do your rankings, Ben?
So on pitching, I like to look at points just because for me, as a starting pitcher ranking, that is the system that values starting pitchers best and most. And so if I'm preparing for a points league, I have to really focus in on starters, and I have to focus in on what they do well and what they don't do well as well. So that forces me to look at some guys. The other thing, as we're doing this, man, it's really hard to pop in anyone who is not for sure going to be pitching day one.
Yeah.
I will say that I have one guy on the entire list who is not going to, and you could guess, you know, with my background, but one guy who's likely not going to be technically in the opening day rotation.
Ian Anderson. Yeah.
That, yeah, exactly. But every other pitcher at this point has a sure spot opening day.
Right. And they're likely to go wire to wire. Right?
Yes.
Like, and you're expecting a 25-plus start season out of them, and that's obviously given a lot of room for play if, like, there's an arm fatigue, there's something where they take a start off here, if they're part of the Dodgers and they're just going to end up missing some starts. So,
well, and that's also why I've got a couple of guys, and we'll get into in our first batch here, a couple of guys that are probably on the older side for dynasty rankings, but they're the type of guys that just find a way to make their starts every single year, and they're high quality starts. And yeah, they're probably getting to that point where it's going to fall off at some point, but I'm not going to make the bet that it is this year or next year or the year after. I'll be the guy holding them when that fall off happens, because the years until that point are going to be that much better than what you're getting out of, is he going to be there? Is he not? Which is pretty much every other pitcher below him. So
that's a great way to say it, because if you constantly turn the page on a player, as I've heard, GM lure in baseball is, I'd rather trade a guy a year early than a year late. But that's if you're trading for value. If you're in dynasty, depending on your cycle of winning, if you are always in it, if you are doing waves of competitiveness, you don't want to get rid of a player if it's going to make you worse. And also, prospect chasing, it's a horrific condition across fantasy baseball dynasty players.
Oh, yeah.
Where we and always like the shiny in pitchers. Tool. Yes, because they're going to change the game, right? Pitchers will always change the game. Now, we have seen a breakthrough with rookies.
I was just going to say.
Recently, and that's just going to reignite it all. Mm-hmm. But I've got an example on my list when we get to it, which will have to be very quickly, that this is a guy who I think is going to be back and going to do what he did before. So, Ben, why don't you throw the opening pitch on your 15 through 11 for us?
All righty. I am going to kick things off with a sophomore as far as major league experience, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. And as my 15, then I have Dylan Cease at 14, Garrett Cole at 13, Zach Wheeler at 12, and Grayson Rodriguez at number 11.
Okay. I was just going to highlight the guys that we overlapped on, but I think I would have been highlighting everybody, so I didn't bother. So that was excellent. That's imagine two of those five dudes in your dynasty rotation. You know, you're sitting pretty for it. So
and you're talking, I mean, if you look at the NFBC things that are going on right now, granted, those are single year leagues, not dynasty, but you easily could take those guys. If you had the turn of 3 and 4, you could easily grab two of those guys.
That's right. Yeah. So the term pocket aces, which I was in a fantasy league with the guy who said, I'm the one who came up with it, but honestly, who cares? It's just an interesting way to go about redraft, where if you are one of the turn guys or within, you know, two or three of it, you can kind of sway some of your competitors. If you plan out your draft really well and go with, you know, a couple closers, a couple starters, a couple outfield, whatever it is, you can go tick, tick on a couple, and then all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, crap, position scarcity. So, but what we won't find in position scarcity here, I'm going to reset myself for the 8 minute and 50 second mark here. For my 15 to 11, is arm power. And I'm starting off with Roki Sasaki, the new Dodger. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a slow start for him because he's part of a six-man rotation, but I still love him. And then at 14, I've got Grayson Rodriguez, who I did mention earlier about a couple years ago, this was going to be the guy. So that means that there are people above him at 14. I've got Tanner Bibee, one of the guys who mm-hmm. went up above him. He's my 13. 12, Yamamoto. I'm not going to ruin the first name, but that's now my second Dodger on the list.
Yeah.
That's my number 12. And then my number 11 is Sandy Alcantara. Now, I loved Alcantara as a Cardinals prospect. I loved when he moved to Miami because it was like, here you go, now you can pitch. And I picked him up, I think it was 2018 season. I believe it was like him and Montas. I got him and Frankie Montas right before Montas solidified himself with Oakland. And mm-hmm. Alcantara started to become a regular contributor in fantasy. And I specifically had Alcantara in a points league as he was going up and going up and going up. And then he hit free agency in this particular league. The next year, of course, he busted his arm. We're waiting to see what he comes back as. Yeah. But he's not coming back as a 32-year-old veteran. He'll be coming back still in his 20s.
Yep.
He's still, like, I don't need the flamethrower guy that he once was. I need the location guy and the weak contact guy. And, of course, the K's will be there for Alcantara. But he's on a team in Miami that has been able to do good things with pitching. Yes, they took a step back last year, but the prior year they were doing great, and Alcantara was a major mm-hmm. contributing factor for it, and I love him. And all these guys, they're all righties too. They all could make really positive contributions to their team. Two of them, of course, Dodgers.
Yep. So since we both had him in this move or area, I will let you know one of the things that in my prep for this, I've been kind of looking at where guys are on things like Stuff Plus and things like that to see, is there anybody who might make a move up? Did you know that there is one pitcher in all of baseball right now who has an above average, so above a 100-point marker, on five pitches? And
Trevor Bauer.
Yeah, that exactly.
So there's two pitchers, but only one's in MLB.
I said pitches, not but never mind. Yeah. Anyway, Grayson Rodriguez has five pitches that he throws that grade out as a 100 or better on Stuff Plus.
Okay.
And I think that is, he came up as such a fastball changeup guy. And two very distinct fastballs, but still, his fastballs and his changeup were his leading pitches. And I think what we've seen since he very famously got sent down to work on some stuff, came back, and he has done a lot better or a lot more mixing in his breaking stuff since. And last year, towards the end of the year, he really figured out where that sweet spot was for him with his breaking stuff. And I really, if I'm drafting a brand new dynasty league right now, he is probably higher than this even for me, because he is definitely a guy I think is on the up, and I want to make sure that I'm not missing out on. But
yeah, I agree with that. I think he is, he has not yet performed or pitched his best games. And because of that, he is no longer the shiny new toy, and mm-hmm. he is a couple years a veteran now. So dynasty guys have not necessarily moved on, but they haven't seen what they wanted to out of him. He hasn't had the same type of struggle as other guys have, who have been, you know, Corbin Burns is an example of a guy who was struggling as a starter, trying to get it going in the bullpen, and then it clicked one year. But the year it clicked for Burns, he went from the bullpen to the rotation, never looked back. That's not been Rodriguez. He's been starter, tried and true, like you mentioned, been back. And coming back up now, not just coming back up now, but now being part of that rotation, he just isn't leading it, which I don't think is a bad thing, because when they handed the ball over and opening day starts to Alec Manoah's second year, that was a very bad choice that Toronto made doing that. It was too much on his shoulders. I did mention it at the time. Of course, like, I'm just making, you know, general human being observations of, you're putting an awful lot on a 23, 24-year-old, and oh my goodness, it didn't. He wasn't able to take it when they had veteran pitchers in and around But they gave the ball to him and put the pressure on him. And I think he would have been a really good SP4 in his sophomore year, not in skill, in pressure on him. And Grayson Rodriguez, mm-hmm. I think the pressure has been taken off him a few times now, not because Baltimore thinks he's, you know, their only hope. He's not their Roy Halladay type, but because they've needed a rotation and they keep bringing people in who are now like kind of more interesting or of that nature. So Rodriguez, I think, is a very low-key guy. Similar to me is Tanner Bibee, who I think is a low-key. He just gets it done and will continue to.
Another thing, and I'll, you know, you can throw this as Braves bias, but I just think it's a really smart veteran bias. Charlie Morton in that rotation is going to do a lot for Grayson Rodriguez.
Hopefully.
He's really smart as a pitcher, loves to saddle up. If a young guy wants to learn and saddles up with him, they're going to learn. And that's, you know, I felt the same way. Jesse Chavez can pitch forever in Atlanta. Granted, you know, the Rangers just signed him to a minor league deal, which means that sometime in June he'll be traded back. but Jesse Chavez sitting in the bullpen.
Right.
I mean, someday that guy is going to be a pitching coach. He can look at a guy and go, why don't you try this with what you already have? And all of a sudden that guy's a dominant reliever. AJ Minter being a really good example of someone that Chavez worked with. If you watched games when neither of them were pitching, Spencer Schwellenbach and Charlie Morton could have been joined at the hip all year last year. I mean, that's really, he intentionally was on Charlie's ear the whole time listening to how Charlie broke down a game. That's going to be huge.
That's part of what you pay for with some of these veteran relief pitchers that you sign. And Morton's an excellent example. I know Toronto just took a $15.5 million gamble on Max Scherzer, which mm-hmm. I think is an excellent move to do. But you have a veteran-laden staff that has consistently underachieved as a core. Individuals have had high seasons and low. Kikuchi among them, who's now gone, but he was, you know, bad, bad, good, gone. And Kevin Gausman was a three-team guy, and I believe it was like a season and a half, right, where he was Baltimore, St. Louis, Cincinnati, Atlanta, something like that. He made some move. Maybe I'm off on St. Louis, but it was definitely, he had the quick move, ended up in Atlanta, and it wasn't good. And then he went to San Francisco and got it back in San Francisco, and that's when it became San Francisco mm-hmm. in the slider ball. But Scherzer is an excellent second option now. If he's got to be open to, you know, obviously being around Manoah and being around other mm-hmm. arms. But this is something that I think is an excellent move when you need it. And for $15.5 million, if Scherzer starts 15 to 17 times and Toronto's not in it, they can make a play before the deadline to recoup the rest of the salary. But, of course, get an impact prospect in return or a young guy. Yeah. But anyway, we're not here to talk about that. Ben, give me 10 through 6.
All right. So this is where it starts to get kind of fun. Cole Reagans is who I have at number 10. Number 9, coming off a really, really good second half, Hunter Green. Number 8, I have Blake Snell. So there's a Dodger alert. That's my second Dodger. Then my third Dodger, number 7, I have him all the way up here, Roky Sasaki.
Oh, wow. You gave faith to him.
And I will say, looking at that before we hit record, that is the only one I'm looking at my, and I'm like, I might move him down if I were to reset this again.
Okay.
And then number 6, I have Garrett Crochet.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you for having Garrett Crochet as your number 6, because I am seeing everybody who talked so much about how Garrett Crochet was not going to do this and not going to do that. And I remember scooping him up in a few dynasty leagues, first round, you know, as soon as I could. I understood he came up as a relief pitcher, and they talked about, he could be a closer and this and that. Mm-hmm. And then the Tommy John, and he came back, and the Chicago's like, we're just going to start him. He does not yet have a full year as a starter, but you can tell what he will be. It is very obvious that Garrett Crochet is an absolutely dominant pitcher, despite not yet having the innings on the arm. Now, if he goes and ruins himself, in the next 3 months, we'll have to mm-hmm. edit this podcast. I'll just take out the segment, so I'm timing it.
There you go.
But until that point, I'm just glad to have other people on board with me, because I have liked Crochet for a long time, and I've been mm-hmm. happy to see it come together. So my 10, I start with one reclamation project, Eury Pérez with Miami.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is going to come back, and we are in 1 year. Whoever did not go and get him before mid-May is going to regret it, because he's going to become an untouchable again. But I don't know that it's going to be immediately dominant, because they talk a lot about needing a year for your control to return. And since I'm not a pitcher, I'm just an old man who's injured, I will agree. It takes time to get fully healed. Number nine, Dylan Cease. I have liked Cease for a while. I just think this is a guy in his prime, and we're going to enjoy it for a while. I then knock off a couple Mariners. I go Logan Gilbert, 8. I then George Kirby, 7. Reason Kirby is in front for me is that this is my Mr. Consistency pick. He's going to pitch. He's going to get you good quality starts. He's going to get you wins. The K's in total will be there, but the K per 9 is not. Again, for points league, it's fine. His ERA is stable. It is not elite, but his whip is. His whip is excellent. So if you are a category guy, he's going to help you if you have the whip category. And then my number 6 is also Garrett Crochet, now with Boston. And he is inside because of the team change. I didn't know what he could reasonably expect to get in wins. You know, would 10-11 be his peak on a bad White Sox team? Well, now I would say with the new Sox on, with the Red Sox on, 10-11 is going to be closer to a floor for him.
And he is a guy would have no problem someone telling me that he should be number one or number two based on just the raw ability he has coming from the left side.
Yeah.
Because if he can show that that is going to stick and he's going to be able to make 25, 30 starts a year with his stuff, he's way too low on both of our lists at number 6, because the talent will be a top 3 to 5 or top 3-ish guy every year with that kind of talent.
I would say talent wise, this list would change. If we were just going on raw stuff, Yuri Perez is the top 5 for me. Crochet's in there too, and then three of the guys I got for sure. But like Crochet is just he's just going to be really good. We saw how the White Sox manipulated his innings as the year went on, and he didn't skip a beat, which when we see with other guys, I forget if it was Glasnow or somebody else that's supposed to be a really good pitcher who talked about getting out of their rhythm as far as like the bullpen days and the when they do things, if they get pushed back, and they said, it really affects them. That's not what happened with Crochet, because Crochet wanted to pitch. So when they were like, you're going to get whatever it was, 70, 80 pitches, when you're there, you're out. He was like, okay, I'm going to stop nibbling and strike guys the F out as quick as I can.
That was.
And so I believe that's the guy that's going to Boston, but he's going to go to Boston by June with 110 pitch count.
Yeah, I had him in a single season points league last year, and you knew he wasn't getting a win. You knew he wasn't getting you innings, but he was still in standard points leagues a 12-point guy almost every time out with 4 innings, because he would get 8 to 10 strikeouts.
Right.
And so, you're not going to get the quality start, which gives you extra points. You're not going to likely get there. You aren't going to get the win, which gets you extra points. But find me, usually about 12 points a game is that has to be a starter every single time. You don't drop him. He's not a streamer sort of guy starter. And so even when he was cut off his innings and it probably hurt his fantasy value, he was still a legit start him every time out in points leagues. And that's probably where it would have hurt him the most. I mean, Roto, he was a god still, and you're head to head, he's giving you, elite stats. So he was just fine, but it was the points leagues where he even could have potentially been an issue. He was still excellent.
And I don't remember if I feel like he would have came into this past year SPRP available. So I think you could have also just had him on the other end for those shorter outings where you're not necessarily counting him as a starter. He's just not getting you a save or hold. He's just racking stats for you on the other end. So he's definitely the most interesting guy, I think, in this list. I personally, within my top 10, Cease, Gilbert, and Kirby are boring in the sense that I expect them to do exactly what I think they're going to do. I'm not asking them to become better, take up a tier. I don't think they're going to tick down. and then Perez is my kind of, obviously Crochet is the biggest wild card, but Perez is the one who was on the cusp and pitching up until his injury, and now we are waiting to see who comes back. Does he come back as a, you know, more dominant version of himself in, you know, 2026? Does 2025 just become the break-in year? Miami has been bad, a la Sixto Sanchez, at getting guys back in the flow.
Yeah.
Alcantara will be another one. So, and I do have two Marlins at 10 and 11 as well, and neither are any higher because I just don't know yet. I need to see what Miami's going to do and how aggressive they'll be with them. So, Ben, anybody else you want to talk about within this, or do you want to get to your top five?
Well, I was just going to mention, since you had Cease in this group, I had him lower, but I felt, I mean, he is one who, as I was lining this up, he was about 10, and I dropped him as the trade rumors got heavier, just because he would be leaving a really good park in a division where he's going to play Colorado multiple times a year. Granted, you don't like it when he's going to Colorado, but Colorado coming to San Diego is just gold for him.
So you don't think Michael Toglia is an issue? Oh, my goodness. You are so wrong.
not playing in San Diego. But same thing, San Francisco. Playing that team, that lineup a couple times a year for Cease with his stuff, that's a lineup that he's going to do nasty things to. And so I really like him in the West. If he stays with the Padres, this is going to be too low. But if, you know, if he ends up, for instance, with the Twins, that's a really good division. I still like that for him.
Okay.
Not as good as a home park, you know, but let's say the Mets and the Braves have both been significant as far as their the rumor mill goes. Either one of those, you still got the Phillies that you're facing in that division, and you've got Washington, who is definitely on the upswing offensively. I don't know that I would like that as much for a guy like Cease, who is, and his stuff kind of feeds into what guys like Schwarber and Harper just feast on. What guy, you know, what young guys are going to try and feast on is that heavy fastball usage that he has, heavy fastball slider usage. His pitch mix kind of feeds into that division a little bit.
That would also Miami not an ideal team to line up. Just because a more free swinging approach, depending on that lineup, because like we mentioned in the previous podcast, they're giving a lot of guys opportunities. We don't know who in 18 months will be locked into a position. Like, I'm only saying 18 months to get us into the 2026 summer when, you know, the guys have had, you know, 700, 800 at bats since today's date. But yeah, I agree. Like, I also was going to say, I think the NL Central would be a bad spot for Cease to go because there's a lot of consistency within that division as far as the competitiveness, or they beat up on each other a lot. So you're going to get into also like balmy, hot, gross conditions. You know, even Milwaukee off Lake Michigan, no different than Chicago. You get teams.
If he can get into, if he was in either of the West divisions, great. I think he's great in either one of those West divisions, but if he ends up moved, right now where you're seeing a lot of those rumors are East Division teams, and either one of those divisions is not exactly ideal. So anyway, that's just, Cease is the one that popped up when you mentioned that. I was like, yeah, I agree with him on talent right there. So, so 5 through 1, Robbie, I'll have you head first this time.
Okay. 5 for me, Corbin Burns, now with Arizona. I mean, you know, former co-host Ty on Dingers never gave up on Burns, and I even traded him to him for like nothing, you know, some terrible deal the year he popped, and I have heard about it since. Even though Ty's not even in that league anymore, it's like that's still a thing that occurred because I didn't believe in the guy. But that's because he was doing, as I mentioned before, the bullpen rotation bump. He didn't have an official spot, but the stuff was good. It clicked for him. He's going to Arizona. He's got the contract. Let's not see, you know, a Robbie Ray situation with Seattle. Let's see, or a Mad Bomb situation with Arizona, as we've seen before. He's not the same age as Mad Bomb was when he went there. Let's see him continue to compete and want to beat the Dodgers and want to beat San Diego and want to not get lit up in Colorado and, you know, be competitive. And that's what I'm hoping for. And that's why he's 5 at 4. I've got Spencer Strider. He is here because the three guys in front of him, I just don't know that, like, depending on what Strider comes back at this year, I don't know that the stat count will be able to beat these three guys over the next 4 years. Tarik Skubal is my number three. I'm not 100% sold on Skubal as just going wire to wire as absolutely dominant. Now, of course, he's just going to be great, but I'm talking like elite across the board. But he is my number three pitcher, so I obviously like him an awful lot. Gerrit Cole is my number two. Yes, he's old. I understand he is my oldest man by 3-4 years on this list. Last year was his lone down year in 7 years. And it was the year he pitched 95 innings, I think, had 99 Ks. But this is a multiple, well into the 200s Ks guy who just starts 30 times a year. If he is hurt now, this is a horrific choice for me to put him at two for Dynasty. But I will acquire him if this occurs where other people feel differently about him. And I will find out, as you mentioned, you know, about keeping the old guy around. He's my old guy I'll keep around. And, of course, my number one is Brent Honeywell. No, my number one is Paul Skeens. You can't not love what he did since he came up. And despite the fact that he's not on a team I would consider bound for the playoffs this year, he might be able to drag 5 more wins than they otherwise would have if they turned it over to the bullpen in the sixth. And he'll still be pitching 6 and 7 and possibly into the eighth to hand it off to hopefully somebody competent in the ninth. And that could be like, this is an excellent starting pitcher who is young enough and dominant enough that he should be able to roll in because he can just dominate hitters and lineups.
Yeah.
And that's what makes him, to me, number one, exactly as Gerrit Cole did after he left Pittsburgh. Skeens is doing it while still in Pittsburgh. So once Skeens gets traded to Houston, it's all just going to be crazy. But anyway, so yeah, so I've got Burn, Strider, Scuba, Cole, and Skeens as my 5 through 1. So, Ben, who do you have?
So you had the two Mariner boys in your 6 through 10. I have them in this group.
Oh, really? Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
I have Logan Gilbert, number 5. Then you and I actually have the exact same number on Spencer Strider. And my big thought here is this is a dynasty ranking. If Spencer Strider comes back and he is 100-mile fastball, 90-mile slider, and it's not the same level of elite control that he had with the two of them before to where he was a dominant starter with it, that moves really well into a dominant closer. In a dynasty setting, it's like, well, you're moving from stud to stud. But so that's why I still left him this high. I had a lot of concerns about maybe moving him down because of injury. But number three for me is George Kirby, and that's, I can count on him every year, year in, year out, to have a holy crap good whip. But he's going to do all the things that don't hurt you.
Yeah.
And give you lots of innings to where he's going to rack up the other stats eventually too.
I'm so glad to hear that because I have felt like I have been alone in a high Kirby rank with consistency when ranking year over, like you're ranking multiple years, not just redraft, like dynasty rankings. George Kirby is such a core guy to a fantasy staff.
Are you really listening to this show on the crapper? If you are, that's fine. Plato Podcast will be right back.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Right now, get up to a $15 gift card after rebate when you purchase select SuperStart batteries exclusively at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
So that leaves, for me, number two is Tarek Skubal. Mm-hmm. And I've loved it. His draft year, you started to hear the, this guy could really be more than he's getting led on to be. And I, you know, you mentioned Corbin Burns. He is actually my 16, quite literally. For me, the age 30 thing was kind of an issue, but Corbin Burns, when he was coming out of St. Mary's, he got picked in the fourth round that year. That was the year the Braves had like four picks in the first 40. And got like Ian Anderson and Kyle Muller and Joey Wentz and all that in that same draft. I so badly wanted Corbin Burns to be their next selection, but they went with some catcher that's never seen the major leagues. But I knew Corbin Burns was going to be that guy. And same thing, watching Skubal, you kind of went, oh, he's not getting the notice he should, but that's going to be that guy soon. And he took that step forward this year. And it looks like the Tigers want to build around him, which is, that's a big thing as far as the dynasty stuff is. It doesn't look like he is a you use Garrett Cole in the Pirates situation. This is a guy who is on a team that is on the upswing and wants to keep building on the upswing to keep that momentum going. And then, yes, I have Liv Dunn's boyfriend as my number one. So Paul Skeens, and that is I think right now it's hard to find a fault with a guy who came up with a new pitch coming into his first full professional season and then used that as a dominant pitch in the major leagues. Like, this is a guy who put up record-breaking numbers in college, got drafted number one overall because of it, and then just said, you know what? I'm going to level up by rookie year. Like,
I got an
crap.
Idea. Hey, pitching coach, I've been working on this. What do you think?
Yeah. Like, jeez.
That's
like,
talent, right? That's the ability to work towards the goal and then achieve it. And I mean, for Skeens, pitch mix could be his bread and butter for years. And I don't know if it's going to be Andy Rodriguez long-term catching him. Is it Joey Bart? Whoever it is. I also don't know who was catching him last year, to be honest. Obviously a Pirates catcher, but was it Joey Bart that was catching him?
That'd be interesting to look up. Yeah, I've never looked it up.
That might be part of the package here where we've seen catchers get taken along with pitching staffs or with pitchers in particular. Skeens might have really flourished under the confidence of somebody like Bart, who's like, hey, like I caught this guy, or like, you know, I've seen this experience, like I've had this experience, so blah blah blah, as any of the guys could. because he did miss out on the excellent experience Jacob Stallings could have given him a few years ago when he was with the Pirates. So, but anyway, so that's our top 15. We would love to go deeper into our list, and we've got questions that'll cover more names, but we are deep enough into this podcast that if you are still listening, because I know some people don't care about top fives because that's more obvious to a lot of people. They want to hear more names, deeper names. Who are 30 through 50 for us? Who do we have that's, you know, outside the top 75, right? Who are peripheral guys to take in your dynasty that could in 3 years be some of these ranked 10 to 20 guys for us? If you want to hear that, two things you need to do. One, hop on the YouTube, subscribe if you're not already. If you are, excellent. Hop on the YouTube again, go to this podcast and like it. We want to see 100 likes on this podcast, this one right here that you're listening to.
Yeah.
And or 1,000 subscribers. When we get to 1,000 subscribers, as long as it's not mid-season when it doesn't make any sense, Ben and I have agreed to go through all 30 rotations and to dip into their prospect bank and their minor leagues to give a little overview on what we could reasonably expect here. So if you want all that pitching information, we'll give it to you.
The subscription's free. You know, you will need to clear off a Saturday to listen to that. But, yes. You know,
much as we will the Friday from work to get prepped.
to get ready for it. Yeah. But absolutely. And that's one of the things coming into this. You know, we both talked before we started recording that, God, you're leaving a lot on the table that we don't get to talk about here. And that doesn't mean we don't want to talk about those players. And so that's part of why we have these extra questions that we like to throw in. If you guys have listened to us on our Big Three Next Three Prospect series, you know that Robbie and I very seldom stick to three and three and then get out of an organization. It's almost always that there's another half dozen guys that we end up talking about, at least. Yep. We love talking ball. We love talking about all these players. So now we have these extra questions. And Robbie, let's get right into them. Who's a guy that you don't have in your top 15 that you regret where you rate them?
A top 15 that I... Sorry, you're saying a top 15 that I regret where they are?
No, a guy outside your top 15. Where they're ranked.
Shane McClanahan, I guess, is one. He's an 18 for me. Max Fried is my 16, so he's knocking on the door. But the one guy who I think I will, because I have championed him now for 2 years, and I think he is, like, excellent and just he just needs to refine it a little more, is Spencer Arrigotti. I think he's at my 25, which is already aggressive, because if you're going by 30 team rankings, you rank 150 pitchers that are going to start in your league, just like in Major League Baseball. And I've got him as like an SP1 type, meaning he's a top 30 arm. Clearly doesn't mean I think he's an ace, but I do think he is poised with the stuff to potentially become that. And Houston's got that catcher we talked about, that offensive guy who should stick around. They've got corner infielders, current and future, that should help to stabilize things there. It just seems to me like Arrigotti could really, really do good things with a team that has historically done good things with J2 guys. He's been a later round draft pick that I think could take a big step forward. I regret not being more ballsy, but I felt like I had dropped enough of my balls, if you know what I'm saying, by putting him at 25.
Yeah.
But I, you know, inside, I'm looking at the list. I can easily see how he could go above him and him and him. Yeah. And by midseason, now we're in the top 20. I think we could be 8 starts away from me feeling a lot better. But Arrigotti got roughed around a few times last year, but also 10K games showed us what he can do. So he's the guy for me, Ben. Who's somebody for you that you don't like where you've ranked them? High or low, I guess.
Well, and that's, I will say, before I did some more work on looking at pitch stuff plus and things like that, I had put down 40 pitchers, and zero of them were named Hunter Brown.
Okay. All right. And fair.
You go through, you examine his year. Did you know that he made 30 starts last year?
No. When I did look, so I was also looking. He's 36 for me. Christopher Sanchez is 35. And Zach Wheeler's 37. So that is a strange brew mix right there of age, experience, and production. All guys that have been good, but I clearly don't see the sustainability of what they've done as far as like being at the lead of a rotation or of a fantasy rotation, I should say. But yeah, I think Hunter Brown is an excellent pick, as like we could not be thinking highly enough of him.
And his second half last year, 2.26 ERA, 1.13 WHIP. In 71 and two-thirds innings, he had 74 strikeouts. He took that step forward that everyone was saying, yeah, he kind of needs to do that. He kind of needs to do that. And it was, he had such a horrific April and March. 9.78 ERA over six starts. And, I mean, you can't just ignore you can't just ignore a month of play, but I was just, you know, this is fabulous radio for anyone who's not watching this, but pulling this up here from his first start in May to the end of the season, that's 25 starts technically, because he had an opener one night, 2.51 ERA and 155 strikeouts over 147 innings from his last start of April done. So starting in May all the way through the end of the season, he got out of that horrific month and was just lights out. And the more I looked into him, the more I thought, oh gosh, I am really going to regret not having him somewhere in that top 15 by the end of the year. But for right now, I'll just be very happy that I have done that look. I've seen those things, and maybe I can go out and get him from somebody who also, like me before I started this, doesn't think of him as even a top 40, top 50 arm.
Okay, so here's my question for you then. If you're thinking like that, hey, I can trade for him, and you're trading for a pitcher, who do you think, and you've got to envision, just like the listener will, envision your league settings. Who do you think is a player or a pitcher that if you said one for one, I think we can make this switch and Hunter Brown will be better long term?
Michael King right now.
Oh, okay.
I guarantee I could get Hunter Brown for Michael King in like every league I'm in.
That's interesting. I moved Michael King back quite a bit after we were going to record this podcast over a week ago. You know, life happened and we didn't. I since moved King back spots to 49 now. Like, he's overcorrected.
he dropped tremendously when I looked into more on pitch shape and things like that. And I thought it really was a really, really strong streak that he started at the end of that season with the Yankees that kicked through the start of 2024. And he didn't hit a wall. The effectiveness of his pitches really declined as the season wore on. And I just wonder what that's going to look like. And that's the thing. For me, great. I love having a guy who's good in April. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Love having a guy who's good through the middle of the season. But when you are neck and neck for a fantasy championship in September, I can't have a guy who doesn't have any gas left. And if I know that that's your pedigree, that's what you're going to be. Nope, can't do it. So, you know.
Yeah.
There we go. I had to throw in some Singletary.
Okay, so we're kind of circling around the same deal here. So who should be there within your top 15 but wasn't? You said Hunter Brown is a rank you regret.
Mm-hmm.
But who's one when you look, you're like, yeah, they kind of should be. And I just didn't do it, or I don't regret it, but they will produce at that level. Like, I talk about Kirby as like a kind of a lock for production. Is there somebody that you can see?
If he had more than 1 year, Spencer Schwalenbach would be that guy for me.
Really? Because, a brave. How? Wow. How?
Yeah. Okay. I understand.
Way to go out on a limb, Ben.
We're talking about a guy who has three different fastball shapes, who has
double A, triple A, and out of the park. Is that right?
And two different changeup shapes. Who worked on? He showed it multiple slider angles. This is a guy who really has. He was a guy who was drafted as. Yeah, there's not a lot of innings here, but he throws 98 and he can control it. So we like that. We're going to take him even though he's coming back from Tommy John, and we think there could be something there. Probably a reliever. And he comes out and he's throwing six pitches that are just off the wall good. And, you know, we both talked about it. Number one, you got a guy like Skeens who's throwing triple digits and doing essentially the same type of thing as Schwellenbach and coming up with new pitches and things like that. And he's the easy number one. And Schwellenbach does a lot of that same stuff as a rookie, his first tour through the league, but he did see multiple teams multiple times. So it's not like he got his first look at everyone and nobody knew what they were getting. And so therefore this is going to be a bad sophomore year. I will tell you, Philly fans and Mets fans that I know on various places, they aren't saying the world's going to end with Max Fried gone. They think that no problem, Spencer Schwellenbach steps into that spot in the rotation.
Oh, okay.
And so, that he is the easy, that guy that is going to make 30 every year for you as far as, you know, 30 starts, and he's going to be a solid performer. And now and then he's going to pop out a Cy Young adjacent type of season, but he's going to be that, you know, if I wanted to put it back early 90s type of player and go for the same team, a Tom Glavine type of guy who's going to come out and he's just going to give you a heckishly good consistent results that, you know, in an era where wins meant a hell of a lot for Cy Young voting, Tom Glavine won a couple because of that. But he wasn't ever a big strikeout guy. He wasn't ever the most dominant pitcher, but he was still a guy who consistently put up 250 to 3 ERAs and was just, you know, that good. Really excellent pitcher for a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I've got for myself the rank. Sorry, who should be there but wasn't? So it's not. I don't know the best way to explain this to everybody out there. I love me some Asian imports. Okay. You know, you got your prospect shiny new toys. I got my Asian. I'm aware. But what happens is you can't relate their stat lines to what is projectable MLB success, right? So you have to look at who they are and what they throw and how that might relate. Hassam Kim's an excellent example of somebody who was, as a hitter, very dominant, and I was like, oh, this is going to be a 25-25 guy, right? It was a terrible finish for him last year with the injury. He then ends up in Tampa Bay now for, I think it's a two-year deal that he's on. But he's in Tampa Bay, and I don't think they're going to, you know, let him really do whatever he can possibly do. Hopefully he just plays every day, and at that point, I think you could see what he could do, but he didn't end up taking what could have been maybe the best opportunity for him when he ended up going to San Diego. And people were talking, because that was when Tatis was their shortstop, if you'll all remember. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't the best landing spot for him. But a lot of the other guys have had ideal spots. And I've got Cody Senga with the Mets way back at 39 for me. Yeah. And I think he could be so much better, and I think he'll produce so much better than my rank. And Shota Imanaga with the Cubs, I've got him at 40. And I think he's going to produce so much better. But when I work this out, I look at the names above and I see potential high-end production K, you know, you name it, potential.
Yeah.
The Mets are going to win games. The Cubs will be fine. They're not going to be a 65-win team. They're going to win games. And I think that that's, you know, they're in company back here with a bunch of Pittsburgh pitchers. Jared Jones, Mitch Keller, and Bubba Chandler are all within this range here. And I like those guys. But I don't know how good, like I mentioned with Skeens, I don't know how good Pittsburgh themselves are going to be. If they all get better, of course, you get more wins. Now, with Mets, with, you know, Phillies pitchers, they're going to get wins. But I think both Chandler, or sorry, both Senga and Imanaga will produce much better the next 2 to 3 years. And then there could, of course, be the drop off in the, you know, fourth and fifth years, that which is, of course, where I'm trying to do my rankings, is like a 5 year cycle where I think these guys are going to be able to compete with. So, Ben, who moves up big time if they get a new team for you? I already mentioned a big bump for me was Crochet moving to Boston, because that's just wins. Of course, with the constraints off, there should be quality starts for him. That's not team related, but the lineup around, the lineup in front of him should put some more runs up. Is there somebody on your list that you think with a new team would be a easier rank for you?
And it's a guy that I already love, but when I started digging into pitch stuff, Logan Webb was one who stuck out.
It's funny, because I was just looking at him.
when he pitches outside of what kind of the Giants, I don't want to say force on him, but strongly encourage him to stick to, which is kind of the sinker slider, you know, pound the zone, get ground ball outs, get out of there sort of mix. He flashes pitches that show excellent quality, but then he throws them at max like 12% of a time in a game. And you're like, well, wait a minute, that could be a good, you know, if you can pitch that one 20%, you could throw in another one for 20%. Man, this could be a dominant ace, not just an ace that, you know, goes out. For points leagues, Logan Webb is brilliant for you, because he's going to give you a ton of quality starts, ton of innings, and over those innings, he'll give you pretty solid. Because of those innings, he'll get decent strikeouts. But he's always going to be a risk for home runs, because he is a very predictable pitcher. Even if his stuff is that good that he still gets around it, he really throws kind of a pretty limited thing. And that's what the Giants do well with certain guys. But when they have a talent that can break out of that, that's what allows them to remake guys like Carlos Rodon and Kevin Gausman, is that they say, hey, focus on these two things, these three things. And lo and behold, that turns those guys around, because they've been trying to do too much. But once you get a guy who's achieved that, notice that guys who have achieved that with him then go off somewhere else and either continue success or run into the injury bug. Logan Webb has had that success for a long time and just has never really been turned loose to do other things.
Okay. I was going to build a case for Ryan Feltner of the Rockies.
You can say this about like any Rocky.
Yes, absolutely. The German Marquez, everybody. Kyle Freeland was another one that came to mind. But as I was just really quickly looking, because I know last year was his first like real prominent year. He was 3-10 with a 4.49 ERA, 30 starts, 162 and a third innings, 138K. You know what? I'm going to make a case for Ryan Feltner. If Ryan Feltner was on a better team, the line would be much nicer for him. And just you look at the 21 is when he broke in. But again, it was, what was the inning? 6 1/3. And he didn't until 2022 have 97. And then last year, 43. This year, 162. So Ryan Feltner is your project guy. He's potential. He can do good things, but he is on a team and in a park that make it harder for him to shine for fantasy purposes. So maybe he wouldn't become a top 15, but maybe he would be able to take his arsenal and move it to a team like a Cardinals, like, I don't know, I'm not trying to think of a dominant team, just a regular old MLB team, and we could see a pitcher that we're like, hey, this guy's pretty good, right? He's not losing three times more than he's winning. He's right around 500, and he's stolen a couple wins, you know, or he's avoided a couple losses by doing this thing or that. So Feltner's my one obvious, not my one obvious. He's my one that I really wanted to go for. And
so if I were to ask you this, who would you say of our two guys in this same category was the older of the two? Logan Webb or Ryan Feltner?
Feltner's older
by like a couple of months.
So he's older still, because he was drafted in 2015 by the Jays. If you want to talk about how does a guy get on my radar, didn't sign and then was drafted, I think, in 18 by the Rockies. So he has been a slow, I mean, COVID, sure, not that year crushed him because I don't think he was part of their 60 man.
No.
But yeah, Logan Webb, you know, came out of nowhere, so to speak, that he wasn't a big dynasty prospect on the cusp, at least in the circles in which I run.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't hearing the name. So I love saying that. And then somebody's like, I had him ranked third. And I'm like, okay, sorry. The week before luck. He got called up. Sure you did.
Yeah.
Okay, Ben, who is a prospect you wish you had? I mean, this is our bread and butter, but who on this list are you wishing you're rostering?
If I'm wanting a guy that I have rostered everywhere, it's Bubba Chandler.
Okay.
And this is, you know, the prototype Texas righty build and stuff. And, you know, really, his minor league time, everyone goes, what you hear some folks say is that, well, he had some good performances. And yeah, last year was elite, but he's just kind of been a slow burn working his way up. I'm not really sure if you can count on last year is who he is. Okay, this is a guy who was a legit two-way talent coming out of high school. And not just a legit two-way talent, a legit three-sport college recruited athlete who many thought was going to go to college for football. And if there was NIL at that time, there's a good chance he might have gone because he was already
the money would have been there.
Name, and he could have made some big money on campus. But he's went to baseball. Within a year, he was focused on pitching, and that's taken him some time to get used to. And last year was really kind of the first year he saw all of the shackles taken off, and they really just let him be. And holy crap, was it fun to watch. Now, you've seen Pittsburgh has done well with other big stuff guys, with Skeens, with Jones. Boy, you bring Chandler up and you get three guys like that at the top of your rotation. That's just ugly, ridiculous fun. So,
yeah,
especially if you're a hitter for an opposing team coming in for a three-game set, that would not be a fun thing to look at. Like, oh, well, I'm going to be striking out a lot this week. All right, cool.
And it's just really who's up to bat for Pittsburgh that could, genuinely, that's my concern. Are they competitive offensively?
Yeah.
Right? We've seen teams 100%. Like the Mets did it for years with DeGrom, right? They struggled. They had this excellent pitcher. The Pirates could have an excellent staff with more guys coming, and they just need to make sure that offense is clicking. Now, Spencer Horwitz, I think, could help, but he certainly isn't one of those key cogs that at the moment we're penciling in for greatness. So, but mine's really boring. I've got Noah Schultz because I just love the guy and I want him everywhere. And I wish I'd ranked him higher.
What, the 6'9 lefty? What?
No. I know. I wish I'd ranked him higher. I wish he would get a new team. I want him. He's the guy. If there's a second guy, it's Jacob Mizorowski. Mizorowski? I don't know.
Mizorowski.
Yeah, thank you. I like the end. It's a total Milwaukee name right there. And he is, of course, a Brewer. Now, there was talk last
year. That's a name you have fun saying after you've had a whole lot of Miller Lite.
So. There we go. There was a rumblings last year that he was going to become a bullpen arm because, like, oh, Milwaukee does this, da-da-da. Didn't happen, which is fine. I would certainly like to see him in the show this year. Now, we saw Carlos Rodriguez, who's still young and still a prospect, come up, struggle, and then not have a good year at AAA. I really hope that Rodriguez, for his own sake and for the dynasty shares I now have in him, bounces back, but also that he is able to have his teammate Jacob Mizorowski be successful wire to wire. So
the other one that I want to mention there would go kind of go along the lines with you is Schultz.
Mm-hmm.
I desperately want to I had a brain freeze.
Come on, ChatGPT.
There you go. That's exactly what I need right now. Why am I'm blanking on who I wanted to say, but Rocky's
prospect, Sean Sullivan?
No. Although I love it. Stuff.
The other one?
they actually They do have a few decent arms right now.
They do.
But, Dolander. Good Lord. Chase Dolander is the guy I could not spit out. But that, the raw stuff looks like it did when he was everyone's darling going into his draft year at Tennessee, and then he just had a really cruddy draft year. And that allowed him to slip into the Rockies' hands, which that's just an unfortunate thing for a guy with that kind of stuff. If he was on a different team, I would be all over him as a guy that could make a debut mid-year.
Okay.
But even if he comes up mid-year, I don't want to touch him as a rookie learning the ropes in Coors. That's ugly. So.
All right, Ben, who is an old man with time still left? For me, that is Max Scherzer. I understand he's now in Toronto, which, you know, that's almost beside the point. I will absolutely be watching him pitch this year, and I'm excited for that. I think he's got the ability to contribute on a fantasy level, and for him, really, it's a matter of if he clicks well this year, there's probably no shot at him hanging it up. If he's still competitive, he's going to be back. So I like to think that we've got two or more years left of Mad Max. What about you?
So the guy that I really enjoy watching pitch and hope that he's going to be around for quite a while longer is Framber Valdez.
Okay.
Just does it in a way that it's enjoyable to watch. You know, he had one really tough year, 2019, where he had a 5.86 ERA. Every other year, it's been 3.5 or lower.
Okay.
I mean, he consistently keeps runs off the board. Yeah, it's not going to be elite strikeout numbers, but it's going to be a low 3s ERA, a 1.10 whip. I'll take that all day long as a consistent guy. He is 31 now, so he's kind of on the other side of 30, which for a lot of guys, it's kind of a, when does that bottom fall out?
Yep.
But there are places that like to think that they know what they're talking about when it comes to pitcher injury probability and all that sort of stuff. Any one of those type of places you look at says Framber is a guy that is a pretty decent bet not to get hurt.
Okay.
That he's a good, because of the way he pitches, because of his body, which I got to say, when you tell me a guy who's, you know, under 6 foot and probably 2.25 to 250 is the body style you want to not get hurt, I'm just like, baby, are we in the right world now?
Talk to me, Goose. Okay, last question here, Ben. If only he could finish this sentence. If only he could stay healthy,
Tyler Glasnow would be a top 5 guy.
I agree. And I would say Drew Rasmussen would be a top 15. And they are former teammates, and they went to an organization. Rasmussen still fighting the good fight. Long-term prospect. Broke through finally with Milwaukee. Got traded to Tampa Bay. I got pumped, and they put him in the rotation. Two Tommy Johns under his. Glasnow, I agree. There we go. That's starting
DeGrom's
pitchers.
DeGrom's my other one. DeGrom is the other guy.
Oh, yeah.
You'd love to see him have at least a coda onto his career. You know, one more year where he's healthy for 20 starts, just to kind of put a rubber, you know, put a nice stamp at the end of that career. And then he's probably going to get hurt after those 20 starts. But at least you could say, oh, that's the guy that all of us were just hoping for years that would come back.
Yeah, and Josh Johnson give us one type. More run. Like, Josh Johnson fell off a cliff, and it's unfortunate. Now, I do have a pitcher question that we didn't talk about that for some people would say, how is he not the automatic number one? And that's Shohei Ohtani. Now, Ohtani, with pitcher eligibility after his, you know, third start, fifth start, depending on your league settings, if you're in Yahoo, he's a first base eligible too, I'm sure. But I didn't put him on the list because I don't think he counts as a pitcher, because that's not what Ohtani is. He's a utility bat who also pitches, and he is the best hitter in Major League Baseball. So for anybody who just wants to wonder why he wasn't there, that's my reasoning behind it. He is the number one scorer in points leagues. He's a cheat code, as I've seen other people write. Yeah. You know, whatever you want to say. I'm in leagues where you have to put him in a position. Yahoo also does the divide of two Ohtanis. So pitcher Ohtani would not be probably in my top 50 because I just don't think that's his path forward. long term.
So he has pitched in 2021 through 2023. He had three seasons where he was mostly a full-time starter. 130 innings, 166 innings, and 132 innings. Do you think there's any chance he is 150 innings this year?
No.
No way. And that's just it. I would be very surprised if he clears 100.
I don't think there's a Dodger who's going to hit 180.
No way.
Like,
but that's, for me, that's also why I have Snell higher up on my list, because I just think the Dodgers are going to play so well to what Snell does well. Good Lord, there's a lot of L at the in that phrase. but Snell is a guy who, you know, he's been asked to be a five and dive type of guy, but more than anything, they work around what he does well. And the Giants did a nice job last year of just kind of turning him loose. And if you got six in you, if you got seven in you, great. But we want five.
Right.
We want five elite and get out of there. And I think
that's why we have an $80 million bullpen.
Yeah.
Is for you to go out and just dominate.
That's why we're spending $15 million on a guy who's going to likely be our fifth inning guy.
Right.
You know, so, which is just not what, you know, they're having Kirby Yates, who stole or who saved 30 games last year, likely line up as maybe their sixth inning guy.
And that's why they're winning.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly so, it.
But so, anyway, if you want to win, like, subscribe, join us on the Palazzo Discord, which is free, F-R-E-E. We are wanting 1,000 of you to have subscribed so that we can monetize this bad boy and also do fun, exciting things that you can't do until you have 1,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Exactly.
So join the bandwagon, please. Consider us your Williams Astudillo in 2025, all right? We are the hot ticket item.
A turtle!
We are the hot ticket item this offseason. Get us. If you're new and you've listened this far, thank you, and I hope that this has been helpful to you. Please go back. Watch the stuff on YouTube. We are captained by Michael Govier, who does an excellent job of podcasting in addition to live producing, as well as podcasts like this, where he produces afterwards in post-production, they call it. So like and follow us. He will give a shit because we went over an hour, and for that I ask only for Govier's forgiveness, but also suck it. Okay, we had a lot of info to get through, and we still would like to talk more about pitchers. But,
yep. 903 current subscribers as we look at it right now. All right. We want to get there. So
let's go see find where we friend. Are when you join up and like, listener, okay?
Yes.
Prospects is a curious thing. Make a person trade everything for a king. Wyatt Langford is your one true love. For a prospect, you'll trade all the above. Don't need money, don't take fame. Don't need no credit card to ride on this train. It's strong and it's sudden, it's cruel sometimes, but it might just save your life. That's the power of prospects. That's the power of prospects.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hair thinning can happen for so many reasons. Whether it's stress or hormones or anything, at Nutrafol, we've learned that real change starts below the surface. Our hair growth supplements take a whole body approach and target the key root causes of hair thinning, so you can see visibly thicker, stronger hair in 3 to 6 months.
Hair growth starts from the inside at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com.